Welcome to Rise, the Choice Machine Music, a new podcast made possible through the generous support of the MSU Federal Credit Union.
Frequently called the most cosmopolitan city of the Midwest, Detroit today stands at the threshold of a bright new future, one rich with the promise of fulfillment.
That 1960 promotional film, telling the story of Detroit for a probable bid for the 1968 Olympic Games, captures a narrative of the city that has long been part of its identity. Detroit is a city of the future, and that makes the story of techno not that strange when you think about it.
What's the master plan? What's the master plan? What's the master plan?
My name is Julian Chavez, a professor of English, Bob Berman, Curator of History at the MSU Museum. I'm the lead curator for Techno, The Rise of Detroit Machine Music, a new exhibition about techno from the MSU Museum. Welcome to episode 2, The City and the Sound. In the first episode of this podcast, we talked about sound and its unique relationship to place. This is a central element to understanding techno. It's a unique sound that is Afrofuturist, but part of its uniqueness is connected to the Black experience in a particular place, Detroit. In a way, this is not a shock. Americans have a really strong identification between sound and place across a number of genres of music. But in the case of Afrofuturist sound, I think we need to consider some elements of sonic geography.
The sound is also linked to geography because the sound tells a story in terms of where it came from, its resonance, and how it travels.
That is Afrofuturist theorist Dr. Rinaldo Henderson.
When I first started researching him as Afrofuturism, the abundance of academic writing that existed was really more about techno and not house.
That is Natasha Womack, author of Afrofuturism, The World of Black Science, Sci-Fi, and Fantasy Culture, and a new book, The Afrofuturist Evolution, Creative Paths to Self-Discovery. When we zero in on a particular place and listen to the sound, it's offered us a way to understand the Black experience. In the case of Detroit, the sound of techno is about Black people striving towards the future.
I think it's because techno was so industrial. It reflected sort of the transitions that were taking place in Detroit.
As we heard about in the first episode, the speculative practice, heart of Afrofuturism, has a history we can connect to place. With that truth in mind, it's important to think about Detroit's history and the culture connected to it that provided the circumstances that opened the door to a particular speculative sound that is techno.
Hundreds of thousands of people migrated to Detroit from all over the world. Black folks migrated to Detroit from the South, seeking opportunity in this rapidly growing motor metropolis.
That is Thomas Segrue, a Silver Professor of Social and Cultural Analysis and History at NYU, and author of the seminal book, The Origins of the Urban Crisis, Race and Inequality in Postwar Detroit.
Detroit was, in many respects, the quintessential city of 20th century America, maybe the 20th century world, because it was the center of the auto industry, which was a novel technology that seemed to be launching cities and people into a new future of mobility and connectivity. When Detroit was booming because of the auto industry, it became a magnet for Black migrants seeking economic opportunity, especially after civil rights activists and unionists began to open up parts of the factories to Black workers. Detroit had arguably the nation's largest unionized Black working class, a population that was able to achieve economic advances that gave them buying power and open up all sorts of possibilities for new cultural creativity, especially in music.
As the auto industry changed, the perspective on Detroit shifted.
Detroit began undergoing a profound transformation in the middle of the 20th century, especially in the 1950s and 1960s. This was the heyday of the auto industry and its power and might. But at the same time, the auto industry was pioneering automation. It was using machines to replace human labor, especially folks who were doing labor at the bottom of the ladder in the auto industry. The auto industry is decentralizing. It's moving to other parts of metropolitan Detroit, to suburban areas, to greenfields, and increasingly to rural areas in the upper Midwest, and later to the South and other parts of the United States, even other countries. Lower wage workers, lower costs, lower taxes, weaker unionization. And many of the places that the auto industry is moving to are places with small Black populations, moving to small towns in the upper Midwest, for example. And so Black folks bore the burden of the deindustrialization of Detroit's auto industry because their jobs were at the bottom of the ladder. Or as folks said, the last to be hired and the first to be fired when the auto industry undergoes transformations.
The national story of Detroit is shaped by the consequences of deindustrialization. Yet that view is not the entire story.
There's another side to Detroit in the 1960s. Detroit is fast on its way to being the largest majority Black city in the United States. So at the same time that folks are frustrated, they're hopeful. Detroit is a center of decades of grassroots Black activism around civil rights and racial equality. In the 1960s, it's one of the nation's centers of the Black Power movement, of Black folks looking onto the changing terrain of the city and seeing at once all the problems, but on the other hand, seeing opportunities. It's going to become a Black city, a city that can be reinvented, a city where we can imagine a different future, a future of Black power, of Black control, of Black representation in politics, unprecedented in predominantly white cities or even in Detroit 10 or 20 years earlier. So it's a city that's a paradox in the 1960s, both of discrimination and deprivation and deindustrialization, but also of growing Black power, greater representation, and a sense of possibility. We can imagine a different future.
Throughout history, for African Americans, people of African descent in the U.S., sound and music and so on has been an extremely important part of the cultural archive.
This is Eric Stinkel.
We need to think of sound as archival material as well, not only archives as something written. And I really like that commitment to sound as a historical archive.
If sound is an archive, Detroit's sound is definitely connected to innovation. On the one hand, the history of music in Detroit is connected to innovation, and most Americans know Detroit because of Motown. From the very beginning of the story of techno, the people who have made techno made it clear that it's not copying Motown, that it is something unique into itself. Detroit's history is connected to innovation. From cars to music, people around the world identified the city with the transformation driven by their stimuli. The youth who would create techno were coming of age in an era where speculation about the future was not as clear as it had been in the past. The music they created reflected their understanding of a changing world, one where technology, culture, and society had vastly different pathways to follow.
If you just listened to techno and you knew nothing about Detroit, you know, the music itself sounds like, wow, this is a factory town.
That was Yutasha Womack talking about techno and alluding to something that became very clear as we were preparing and researching for this exhibition. Throughout the process, whenever we mentioned to people they wanted to do an exhibition about techno, it became very clear that there were many sort of sonic geographies in Detroit that offered glimpses into culture, community, and meaning. These geographies were descriptive and iterative. One space would be telling one part of the story, another place would be telling another part of the story. But they're all part of a Detroit story.
Motown was the music of the assembly line. The great cultural historian Suzanne Smith wrote a book called Dancing in the Streets about Motown and Black Detroit in the post-war years. The automobile symbol of people making it, especially of Black people, the assembly line had its own beat, its own rhythm that infuses music in that period. There's a customer base for Motown music, folks turning on their car radios and listening to the songs and the beats of Motown as they're driving.
While the people who created techno aren't necessarily mimicking Motown, they definitely live in a post-Motown cultural landscape, one where innovation and the machine are not foreign concepts. They're a part of the tapestry of the place that they live. And this is something that makes perfect sense for opening the door. Listen to Engel de Fleur, Talk a little bit about this.
That, to me, is what Afrofuturism is really about. Black people experimenting within a certain container and then having to really push the walls of that container out.
And I think of the techno pioneers in terms of what they produced in the 80s. And it seemed to our sound in the future always seemed to respond to our reaction to the environments where we lived, in particular urban environments.
That was Rinaldo Anderson. He calls attention to an important point. Techno is a response to the condition Black youth found themselves in at a particular moment. As a generation living in the aftermath of civil rights activism of the 1960s and the effects of the deindustrialization that followed, they are building on a pattern of future speculation driven by Black culture. They are seeking inspiration from a vibrant radio culture that celebrates music locally and globally.
Mojo was our radio leader.
That was Stacy Hot Wax Hill, legendary DJ from Detroit, talking about the inspiration to open the door to techno in the city.
Welcome to the Midnight Funk Association, the International Midnight Funk Association, with thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of members all over the metro. The International Midnight Funk Association. Ontario, Ohio, Michigan, and the world. For the next hour, absolutely the livest music on the planet Earth will be heard. Will the members of the Midnight Funk Association please rise? If you would like to become a member of the Midnight Funk Association, now you may stand. If you're in water, make waves. If you're driving or riding, get ready to dance on your seats. Get ready to honk your horns. Get ready to flash your lights. You, and you. If you're standing close to your porch light, turn it on for the next hour. Show solidarity with the MFA.
Mojo is electrified. Mojo, the radio DJ from WGPR, who, starting in 1977, had a radio program that was definitional to the musical community in Detroit. His Midnight Funk Association was a venue to expose Detroit residents to awesome music. Alongside figures like Alex Bryan Mojo, there are a number of DJ innovators operating in the city in this pivotal period of the 1970s, bridging the gap between sort of Motown experience and emerging musical trends of the decade. One pivotal figure is Ken Collier, who bridged the gap between soul, disco, and house that gave rise to techno. Here, Stacey Hale talked about the impact of Collier on the musical culture in the city.
Was a pioneer here in Detroit and played a major role in introducing techno. He was at the helm. Mm-hmm. All of us would go to him, as we did with Mojo, with our different sounds, and it would be up to people like him, myself, to play it, to expose it to the public.
The culture that celebrated electrifying Mojo persists in Detroit. The DJ's role as an arbiter of culture remains a critical part of the city's ethos.
You got more DJs in this city per capita than you do mechanics and stuff. There's not enough people, you know, like everybody and their cousin is a DJ.
That is Omar Mehta.
I am a DJ, producer, and music publisher based here in Detroit.
As a contemporary figure in the Detroit music scene, Mehta talks about the ways that the community continues to produce music driven by a creativity that is unique to the city.
Not just a DJ, but a musician. Half of them don't even release their music or posture themselves as a musician or a producer. They just grew up with it. It was part of their everyday ritual. Going from Motown to the new dance show in the 80s, Jeff Mills was doing the DJing. He was called the Wizard. And then you had the Electrifying Mojo, but never died. A lot of people think Detroit fell off in the 90s and 2000s because, you know, the economy and stuff. But if you think about it, Prince wouldn't have ever become Prince if it wasn't for Detroit. They say the Electrifying Mojo was the person who broke his music on the radio, and that changed his whole life. And even Giles Peterson told me that he was the one that ran Talking Loud Records in London, and he was the one that signed Incognito. When I met him, he was here like a year ago, and I played a party with him. He told me, honestly, I haven't been to Detroit in 20 years, and I can say Detroit single-handedly was what saved my whole career. He's like, I put out the Incognito record, and we didn't realize that most of these record sales were right here in Detroit. He made it a point to come to the stadium event. I think it had to have been at Palace in Arbor Hills or something.
Awesome.
He said when he came here, he had no idea what to expect. It was just like a stadium. And he was like, holy shit. I don't know if it's something in the water. I don't know. It's just the geographical location. I don't know what it is, but there's something very special and unique.
For Andrew Charles Edmond, Ace, the first sound culture, that legacy of practice is a perfect reason for why you get techno.
The coming of techno, I see as a collusion of very disparate ideas. There's mainly the disco that came out of New York with Paradise Garage. Sun Ra combined with Yellow Magic Orchestra, people that were really into synthesizers, Roger Troutman from Zapp. There's a lot going on at that time, and that was all around this period where technology had taken the drum set to a new level. I like to think of techno and hip hop as brother and sister. Their first songs that pushed the art form into the mainstream consciousness were both taken from Kraftwerk.
Kraftwerk is often cited as one of the founding influences for techno in Detroit. That German electronic band formed in Dusseldorf in 1970 was lauded as an innovator and pioneer in electronic music. The other pathway that's often cited is Parliament.
Parliament would be first before Kraftwerk because Detroit is known for funk. George Clinton has been, it will always be the ruler of starting that movement.
So techno builds of the influences of groups like Kraftwerk or a band like Yellow Magic Orchestra, a Japanese electronic band formed in Tokyo in 1978. It also builds on the innovation of someone like George Clinton. All of these influences are also a part of a kind of conversation taking place between the music in Detroit and other sounds that are developing in sister cities like Chicago. And that sound is house.
When house was developed, I don't even think it had the title. It was just somebody had the bright idea to press a track with just a beat, just some drums, just do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Jesse Saunders did that.
In developing the techno exhibition, one of the narratives that emerged from all our conversations was the importance of Chicago house music as a kind of parallel mirror to what was happening in Detroit. Many of the early techno DJs and producers in Detroit were also involved in the house music scene, and the sounds and techniques of house influenced their vision of creating a unique Detroit sound. Stacy Hale sheds light on this process.
Oh, this is house music. This was just something kind of cool to happen. So then people receiving it, like myself, going, oh my God, I have a record to have a break at the end and beginning. I can use this record to transfer to get to the other songs. That's how I looked at it. Like, oh, you know, my God, how cool is this? And then electronic put to it even more so, making the different sounds and representing Detroit, because you think of machinery because of the big three. If you've ever been into any factory or anything, or even just sitting on television, it's a continuous sound, you know, even if it's pressing, it's like, and it's, which comes from the assembly line. And you take that and you tweak it. And those are the things that I think house and the techno was born.
With the exchange of ideas and the push to make something different at the core of this moment, the club scene in the city of Detroit served as a proving ground for the evolution of the sound. Detroiters heard new mixes on the radio and attended clubs that celebrated that new sound in the city.
the music was here. It was a huge rage scene in these warehouses and abandoned buildings, or even the train station. People break into the train station and get these huge, these rave parties. The scene was big here for Detroit. There were raves everywhere. It was mixed. It was everybody, maybe more white than black, but it was some of everybody. Then a lot of the DJs who were traveling at the time also played those parties here in Detroit.
Once created, techno traveled around the world and back again. And as John Collins explains, that rapid spread, evolution, and return created a kind of distortion around our collective understanding about the music and its connection to the geography that created it.
Once again, we talk about Berlin and the relationship of techno to Berlin. They loved it from the first time they heard it to the point where they claim it's, some of them claim that it's theirs, but of course, you know, it isn't. It started here, but yet it really moved Berlin and other countries as well. London, France, everywhere.
Created in Detroit and react to its circumstances, techno should be thought of as another example of how Black cultural practice reacted to modern circumstances. Techno became a global musical conversation, and it told the story of Black culture and a Black city, contending with changing technological and political realities. Is a music deeply embedded in a vision inspired by the reality of a better future built on Detroit's history being a Black space with Black people striving forward? In the next episode, we'll examine the machines and the music. What were they, and how did the Black youth create their unique sound? If you're interested in learning more about the history of Detroit, check out The Origins of the Urban Crisis by Thomas Segrue. If you want to learn more about the complex musical legacy in Detroit, check out the archive of the American Black Journal, hosted by Michigan State University online at www.abjmatrix.msu.edu. Browse musical roots and branches, or search for figures like Electrifying Mojo, Sun Ra, and more. Thanks for listening.